Good. Shall we begin?
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavidyam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
We'll begin some recitation for the beginning of chapter 2. Repeat after me, please.
Sanjayo Vacha.
Sanjayo Vacha.
Tam Tatha Kripaya Vishtam. Ashrupurna Kulekshanam.
Ashrupurna Kulekshanam.
Vishidantamidam Vakyam. Uvacha Madhusudanaha. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Utastva Kashmalamidam. Vishame Samupasthitam. Anarya Jushtamaswargyam. Akirtikaram Arjuna. Saibhyam Masmahkamah Partha. Naitad Twayupapadyate. Shudram Hridaya Daurbalyam. Tyaktvotishtha Parantapa. Arjuna Vacha. Katham Bhishmamaham Sankhye. Dronam cha Madhusudana. Ishubhih pratiyotsyami. Ujarha Varisudana. Gurunah Twahi Mahanubhavan. Shreyo Bhoktum Bhaikshamapi Haloke. Hatvartha Kamam Stu Guru Nihaiva. Bhunjiya Bhogan Hrudhira Pradigdhan.
Bhunjiya Bhogan Hrudhira Pradigdhan.
Nachaitad Vidmah Katarano Gariho. Nachaitad Vidmah. Yad Vajayema Yadivano Jayeyuhu.
Yad Vajayema Yadivano
Yaneva Hatva Najijivi Shamas. Devastita Pramukhe Dhartarashtraha. Karpanya Doshopahata Swabhavaha. Prachami Twam Dharma Sammudha Chetaha.
Prachami Twam Dharma Sammudha Chetaha.
Yachreyasyan Nishchitam Bruhitanme. Shishyastheham Shadhi Mam Twam Prapannam. Nahi prapashyami mamapanudyad. Yachokamuchoshanam indriyanam. Avapya bhumavasapatnam riddham. Rajam Suranam Api Chadhipatyam.
Rajam Suranam Api Chadhipatyam.
Sanjayo Vacha.
Sanjayo Vacha.
Tam Tata. I can read. There it is.
Eva muktva hrishikesham.
Eva muktva hrishikesham.
Gura keshah parantapa.
Gura keshah parantapa.
Nayotsyayati govindam.
Nayotsyayati govindam.
Uktva tushnim babhuvaha.
Uktva tushnim babhuvaha.
Very good. That's strange. Okay. Technology is like that. When it's all right, okay. So we continue here in the beginning of chapter 2. In fact, one of the most dramatic points in the entire Bhagavad Gita comes in this morning's class. Most of you have been attending these classes, and we went all the way through chapter 1 and saw Arjuna's incredibly intense dilemma. We saw the intensity of his emotional reaction. He's overcome by his emotions, and we described it as an emotional breakdown or a panic attack right there on the battlefield. And then we also saw, and we had quite a few discussions on the battle, not on the battlefield, but the battle within. The battle raging within Arjuna. The battle between what he knows to be right and what he feels to be right. What he knows to be right by means of his buddhi, by means of his intellect, he knows that this is a dharma yuddha. He knows that if he fails to fight, the consequences are far worse. He knows this intellectually. But what he feels emotionally is an entirely other picture. Arjuna experiences intense revulsion at the very idea of fighting against his own family members. So here we have the classic battle within. The battle between what you know and what you feel. The battle between what you know to be dharma, but what we feel like doing. And one of our discussions today, in fact, as we continue in verse 5, one of our discussions is going to be, there are plenty of times in life we have to do what we don't feel like doing. Why don't we pick up the thread with the fifth verse? Because this is we started the fifth verse at the end of our prior class. We didn't finish it, so let's return to verse 5 and then continue our discussion at that point. You notice also that starting with verse 5, the meter changes. Verse 4, with the shorter meter, we call it Anushtup Chandas, having lines of 16 syllables. But then when we go to the fifth verse, we get into this longer meter called Trishtup Chandas, and we commented in a previous class that that is done quite intentionally by Vyasa to call our attention to verses that are significant somehow. So the change of meter is always done to call your attention to the text. There's something important going on here. So that's why the meter changes with verse 5. Repeat once again, and then we'll discuss this verse.
Guru nahatva hi mahanubhavan.
Guru nahatva hi mahanubhavan.
Shreyo bhoktum bhaiksham api haloke.
Shreyo bhoktum bhaiksham api haloke.
Hatvartha kamam stu guru nihaiva. Bhunjiya bhogan hrudira pradigdhan.
Bhunjiya bhogan hrudira pradigdhan.
The first half we discussed in the previous class, and it's really part of a long passage by Arjuna in which he's looking for reasons not to fight. He's looking for excuses. And we've commented in several prior classes how the intellect is so powerful, but sometimes the intellect gets derailed, so to speak, gets misdirected. Suppose you have something really powerful and it's not used properly. It's misdirected. Its use is misdirected. A good contemporary example would be nuclear power. Now, with the oil crisis, one might argue that this is a good time for this country to consider more nuclear-generated energy. But at the same time, we recognize that nuclear power misused or misdirected, either in the form of weapons or in the form of poorly built nuclear power plants that burn up and blow up, that it's something very powerful, but mishandled can cause incredible harm. Our intellects are exactly like that. One could argue, in fact, very easily, your intellect is more powerful than a nuclear weapon. How can we say that so categorically? Nuclear weapons exist because of what? Your intellect. Our intellect. So our intellects can probably dream up even more destructive weapons. This is the power of the human mind, human intellect. But Arjuna now, under pressure, his thinking, his reasoning has been perverted. I'm using that word quite intentionally here. Because he's now arguing for the wrong thing. He's arguing that he should leave the battlefield. He's trying to use his intellect to make up a good excuse for him to leave the battlefield. We called that in prior classes rationalization. Rationalization is to make a rational, logical reason to do the wrong thing. It may be rational, it may be logical, but it's still the wrong thing. And that's what Arjuna is arguing here in the first half of the verse. He says, Guru, and we saw that in the previous class, he says, Gurun ahatva, not killing our gurus, our teachers. Remember, Drona and Kripa and other of his teachers are among his enemies. He says, Gurun ahatva, having not killed our gurus who are maha anubhavan, who are men of great experience, very wise men. Having not killed our gurus, he is arguing that he should leave the battlefield. So, not killing his gurus, and then doing what? He says, Shreyaha bhoktum bhaikshyam. He said, Shreyas bhoktum bhaikshyam. It would be better, iha loke, here in this world, to bhaikshyam bhoktum, to live upon alms. Bhiksha means alms. Bhaikshyam, it comes here. Alms is the food and monies received by, really speaking, by a monk, a Hindu monk, a sannyasi. So Arjuna, in the first half, argues, it would be better for me to live upon alms rather than killing my own teachers, who are such great men. And as we discussed at the very end of the last class, Arjuna is proposing here that he leave the battlefield, take to a life of a sannyasi, of a Hindu monk, live in a cave someplace up in the Himalayas and dedicate his actions to seeking God. And we won't return to the whole discussion, but at the end of the last class we said, this is absolutely a dharma. How can you begin a life, how can you possibly begin a spiritual journey when the first step is an act of adharma? Doesn't make any sense at all. So his first step in leaving the battlefield, in relinquishing his responsibility, in causing tremendous harm to society by not fighting, that would be an act of tremendous adharma, and there's no way that Arjuna can begin a life of spiritual pursuit starting off by an act of irresponsibility and causing great harm, an act of adharma. So that was his rationalization. Now, his rationalization continues in the second half. Why is it, you know, why is he so, the American expression is hung up. Why is he so hung up on this? Why is he so hung up on not killing his gurus? And he says in the second half of this verse, Hatvartha kaman tu gurun ihaiva. He says, why should we not kill our gurus? Iha eva, here indeed, our gurus who would be killed, hatva, having killed the gurus, artha kaman, for the sake of enjoyment? This is his argument. Hatva, having killed our gurus, gurun, having killed our gurus for the sake of enjoyment of worldly things, He says, Bhunjiya Bhogan, Bhunjiya. I would enjoy, we would enjoy Bhogan, pleasures, rewards of life. Rewards which are Rudhira Pradigdhan. In Sanskrit, it's a very powerful expression. Pradigdha, stained, tainted. Tainted with what? Rudhira, blood. Tainted with blood. The artha kaman, the enjoyments, the benefits that we would gain having killed our gurus upon this battlefield, allow me to paraphrase, the benefits that we would have fighting, killing our gurus, our great, great teachers on this battlefield, that whatever gain we would have, the kingdom and rulership and all the benefits of rulership, he said, how can we enjoy those benefits, Bhogan, Bhunjiya? How could we possibly enjoy those gains of war which are Rudhira Pradigdhan, stained with blood? Now, very emotional language, just to use that expression, stained with blood. This is the problem. How very emotional language can color our judgment. Sadly, this happens every day in the theater of world politics. What a shame it is when major political decisions are enacted based on some, I'm sorry to say, propaganda. That is, emotional situations are exploited as propaganda to motivate people to do all kinds of things. For example, I hesitate only because we don't want to turn this class into a political forum, but there are some recent events which are pretty compelling. For example, you know, at the time when this country was debating whether or not to invade Iraq, weapons of mass destruction and all these political issues, and it was a real questionable situation whether or not it would be dharma or adharma to invade Iraq. There were certain factions that kept showing these pictures of the Twin Towers in New York burning and crashing to the ground. Now, to keep thrusting in our faces images of these Twin Towers in flames, what is the purpose of that kind of image? Isn't that a form of propaganda using emotions to lead us to a certain decision? And isn't that exactly what Arjuna is doing here? Talking about the gains of war stained in the blood of his own teachers. It's exactly the same. He's using a very powerful emotional image, trying. Emotions, as we've discussed, emotions are valid. Emotions have their validity. We discussed in several classes. But we said that if your job is to determine what is dharma in a situation depends on what causes the least harm to everyone involved. We talked in several classes about the doctrine, the principle of ahimsa, the principle of least injury. And in those classes, we made it very clear that the only way we can figure out the course of action that causes the least harm is by employing our intellects. If you want to figure out what is the best thing to do in terms of causing the least harm, you have to evaluate a complicated situation. You have to look at several possible alternatives. You have to select the best alternative, the alternative that will cause the least harm. Tell me, how good are your emotions at analyzing complicated situations? How good are your emotions at evaluating several alternatives? How good are your emotions at selecting the particular alternative that will cause the least harm? This is the point. Our emotions are valuable and valid, but emotions cannot make decisions. That's not what they're meant for. Emotions are meant for feeling feelings. Emotions are not made for this decision-making process. So Arjuna here is making that classical mistake of introducing very emotional images, trying to find an excuse to run away from the battlefield. Before we leave this behind, there's a situation that arises in our lives. Here Arjuna is complaining that if I go forward onto this battlefield, I will have the blood of my own family members on my hands. How can I fight, knowing that I will have the blood of my own clan upon my hands, having killed them? Very powerful argument. In introducing the verse, I mentioned briefly that sometimes we have to do things in life which are really unpleasant and nasty, and sometimes even dealing with our own families. Just because it's your own family doesn't mean it should be ignored. Let's give a couple of very realistic examples. Once in a great while, there's a problem where a family member has a problem with alcohol, as an example. And sometimes all the other family members, thinking about the family member who has a very clear and serious problem with alcohol, no one wants to deal with it. No one wants to confront him. No one wants to talk to him about this problem. No one wants to help him get treatment for this problem. This is a mistake. Wouldn't you agree? If there's a problem, you can't say, oh, but he's our family. All the more reason to take care of him, the fact that he's your family member. So you say, but it'll cause conflict and dispute in the family, because maybe not everyone feels the same way. That often happens. Some people feel, oh, we should perform, they call it an intervention. When somebody has a problem with alcohol and family members intervene. So some family members will be in favor of the intervention, others may not. And then there's a conflict. Well, what should we do? And you say, but if we intervene, then others are going to get, he's going to get so upset, other family members will be upset. Is that the right basis for making the decision? The basis for making the decision is to do the right thing, not to make everyone happy. Is it possible to keep everyone happy? We know better in life. There's no possibility of making everyone pleased and happy. So the commitment to Dharma sometimes means doing the hard thing, even though it's right. Suppose some other examples. Suppose somebody in a family, some husband is physically abusing wife. Happens. And other family members will be silent about such an issue. That is adharma. To remain silent, to avoid dealing with a situation because it's unpleasant or messy, or it's going to make family members angry, to avoid handling a situation for those reasons is adharma. So Arjuna here says, how can I go forth into this battle knowing that my hands will be stained with the blood of my own family members? But still, it's adharma not to go forth. So the message in his verse is that sometimes we have to do very unpleasant things. Sometimes dharma requires us to do those difficult things. Let's continue Arjuna with his rationalization and confusion.
Na chaitad vidmah kataranno gariho. Na chaitad vidmah kataranno gari. Yad vajayema yadivano jayeyuhu. Yad vajayema yadivano jaye. Yane vahatva na jijivishamas. Yane vahatva najijivisha tevastitha pramukhe dhartarashtraha tevastitha pramukhe
dhartarashtraha na cha etad vidmaha na vidmaha. We don't know. It's uncertainty. We don't know. Kataran, which? Naha, for us. Gariyaha, what would be best? says, etat here in this situation, na vidmaha, we don't know, kataran, which of these two, naha, for us, which would be gariyas? What would be best for us, yadva, whether, jayema, whether we should conquer them, yadiva, or naha jayehya, naha jayeyuhu, or they would conquer naha, us. Arjuna is saying, we have to paraphrase here, Arjuna is saying, it's not very clear what would be best. Would it be best if we conquered them, or would it be best if they conquer us? This is Arjuna's argument at this point. Arjuna is pretty confused here. Remember, Dharma Yuddha, Mahabharata, was a righteous war, and remember our very narrow definition of righteous war, a war in which not to fight has far worse consequences. Arjuna knows that. If Arjuna knows that, why is he so confused here? He says to Sri Krishna, you know, Krishna, I'm not sure. Would it be better if we win, or would it be better if they win? They are the force of adharma. Arjuna, as we've discussed before, is not just a big, strong warrior. He's a highly intelligent man, well-trained by his guru, Dronacharya. Arjuna has a strong intellect. Then why is he so confused? Shows that even the strongest of intellects can be thrown off. As strong as your intellect is, a situation can be so overwhelming, so overpowering, that your intellect gets sidetracked, gets derailed. And somebody might argue, oh, well, he just wasn't strong enough. This is an argument that I find problematic. Suppose someone argues, oh, Arjuna's intellectual conviction was not strong enough. So you should make it stronger. The way it works in life is, if your intellectual conviction is this strong and the situation is less challenging, you're okay. But if the situation, if the intensity of your situation is stronger than your intellectual conviction, then you're overwhelmed, and then your intellect gets derailed, and then you start rationalizing, making excuses. So one can argue that, oh, your intellectual clarity and conviction should be stronger. Fine. But then suppose the situation is stronger than that. Well, then make your intellectual conviction stronger, but as strong as your intellectual conviction becomes, it's always possible for a situation to be stronger than your intellectual conviction. It's always possible to be overwhelmed, which means that on our own, based on the strength of our own intelligence, the strength of our own moral convictions, as strong as we are, any of us can fall. That's the rule of life. None of us is perfect. None of us have perfect intellects. None of us are perfectly strong in any situation. All of us are subject to being thrown off and getting in big trouble, and which is why we're coming to the future verses, and that is how to stay out of trouble, so to speak. And when I say stay out of trouble, Arjuna's situation is a little different than ours. Our situation is more like, I know this is the right thing to do, but I'd really rather do that. That's the reality of our life. We hit lots of issues like this, and they're not all big ones. Sometimes they're small ones. But still, we get caught up in that debate. I know this is the right thing to do, but I'd rather do that. And sometimes we go off and do the wrong thing. We cause problems for ourselves. We cause problems for others. We know what is dharma. It's not as bad as Yudhishthira. It's not as bad as Duryodhana. Remember that quote that many classes ago, we famous quote of Duryodhana. Could apply a little bit to us all. Duryodhana at one point says, dharmam cha janami, na cha me pravrittihi, adharmam cha janami, na cha me nivritti. I'll paraphrase. He says, I know what is dharma, I have no pravritti. I have no inclination to follow it. I know what is adharma. I have no nivritti. I have no disinclination to go in that direction. I know what is right. I can't make myself do it. I know what is wrong. I can't keep myself from doing it. This is a human problem. Pointing to the fact that as wise as we are, as strong as we are, it's not enough. We need help. And we're going to find out the source of that help in the coming verses. Now, first half, so Arjuna is so confused at this point. He says, I don't know what would be best. Would it be better if we the Pandavas, conquer the Kauravas? Or would it be better if they, the Kauravas, conquer us, the Pandavas? He says, I don't know what would be best for us. Conquering them, yaneva hatwa, conquering those who, having been killed, hatwa yan, having killed them, those who, those Dhritarashtra, those sons of Dhritarashtra, who are avastitaha, te, those who are avastitaha, standing here, pramukhe, right in front of us. So if we kill them, te, those descendants and sons and relatives of Dhritarashtra, referring to the Kauravas, who are avastataha, who are gathered here, standing here, pramukhe, right in front of us, if we hatwa yan, having killed them, Arjuna argues, na jijivishamaha. Literally, we will not want to live. Najijivishamaha. We will not want to live. Have you ever been in the situation where you say, if I do this, how can I live with myself? That's what Arjuna is feeling right now. Arjuna is saying, how can I live with myself if we kill all of our beloved teachers standing here upon the battlefield? Of course, it's true. Arjuna is going to feel terrible sadness, having killed his beloved family members. But we're forgetting the other part, or Arjuna is forgetting the other part. Suppose he doesn't. Suppose Arjuna actually were to leave the battlefield and do what he suggested in the previous verse. What is that? Head up to the Himalayas, find a nice little cave, move in, and sit down and start his life of prayer and meditation and spiritual pursuit. Tell me, as Arjuna is sitting in that cave meditating, do you think he's going to be meditating all the time? Do you think his mind would be dragged back to that battlefield again and again and again? And Arjuna is going to reflect every day about how much harm he caused by failing to fulfill his responsibility by staying on that battlefield, as difficult as it was. Which is worse? Arjuna here says, how can I live with myself if I fight? Well, how can he live with himself if he doesn't fight? And the harm of not fighting is far worse. So here, this really calls for a tremendous degree of objectivity. In our guest lecture last night, Swami Pratyekbodhananda, my Guru Bhai, used that word. And it's a word that Pooja Swami Dayananda loves to use, and it would be nice to introduce it right here. Objectivity means seeing things as they are. It seems so fundamental in life. You should see things as they are. To see, if you're driving down a road and you don't see things as they are, you're going to be in big trouble. You have to see things as they are. Well, that's true not just driving down a highway. That's true in every aspect of life. If you don't see things clearly, without bias, and see things exactly as they are, you're going to make wrong decisions, wrong judgment, and you're going to pay a price. You're going to get in big trouble. It's objectivity. Objectivity means seeing things as they are. And in terms of following Dharma, there's no other key than this one. the key of objectivity. Objectivity means if you see that it's the right thing to do, you'll do it. You know, no one would deliberately take a course of action that was going to hurt themselves and everyone else. No one decides, okay, allow me to be a little silly. This is a really complicated situation, and what I really want to do is make it much more difficult, much worse, so that everyone suffers much more. Do you think would anyone deliberately make that decision? But we do it. Not deliberately. For example, you're having a conversation with someone. The conversation escalates and escalates into bordering on an argument. You know how that works? And then, you know, you're getting a little worked up, and the other person is getting a little worked up, and it's getting tense, and it's getting difficult. And then you reflect. Do you know what? I'm going to say something really obnoxious and harmful that's going to make this guy really upset and angry at me so that we can end up in a shouting match. You do that intentionally? You do it, but not intentionally. That is, those mean, harmful things come out of our mouths, but no one would do such a thing intentionally. Suppose we could remain clear and objective, even in those difficult situations. We wouldn't make these mistakes. Objectivity, having a clarity of mind, seeing things as they are so that you can choose the right path. This is what will keep us on the path of Dharma. So Arjuna here says, how can I live with myself if I kill them? How can he live with himself if he runs away from the battlefield, causing even more harm? We have to see the situation clearly. All right. Well, let's recite this next verse.
Karpanya doshopahata svabhavaha. Karpanya doshopahata svabhavaha. Prachami tvam dharma sammudha chetaha. Prachami tvam dharma sammudha chetaha. Yachreyasyanishchitam bruhitanhe. Yachreyasyanishchitam bruhit. Shishyastheham shadhimam tvam prapannam. Shishyastheham shadhimam tvam prapannam.
This is one of the real important verses in the entire Bhagavad Gita. Out of those 700 verses, if you wanted to take 10 or 20 verses that were most important, chances are you would include this verse. This is one of the verses that's central, not just central to the story and flow of the Gita, but central to the teachings of the Gita. Let's introduce it first before we see the meaning of it. We understand that Arjuna is confused. Previous verse, Arjuna is so confused that he's not sure should we win or should we let them conquer us. This is, for a warrior, this is maximum confusion. Now, there are two kinds of confusion in life. This is a funny observation. Two kinds of confusion. One is worse than the other. One kind of confusion is to be confused. The other kind of confusion that's worse is to be confused and to think you're not. You have to admit, that's worse. If you're confused and you know you're confused, there's some hope. But if you're confused and you think you're not confused, you're in trouble. And there's a favorite example about this. Suppose you're driving to some social function. And you're driving. You've never been there. Somebody's home in another suburb. You've never been there. And you're pretty lost at this point. And he's driving, she's sitting next to him, and she says, you know, we're lost, why don't we go find a gas station and get some directions? And he says, no, I know where I'm going, we'll get there. Yeah. Look at this situation. They go on driving, getting more and more lost. She says, come on, let's get some directions. He says, no, don't tell me what to do. Now, what's going on in this situation? They're getting more and more lost as they roam around, getting late for their function, whatever it is. They're lost, confused. She's lost and confused. He's lost and confused. She admits they're lost and confused and decides to get some directions. He refuses to admit he's lost and confused. Some ego thing. It's so puzzling. Why? Somebody once joked that there must be something with the what did they say? Something with the Y chromosome that makes men genetically incapable of asking for direction. it doesn't make sense. But it's a common enough scenario that you all laugh, you all recognize that this is a common pattern of behavior. Look at this. He's confused and refuses to admit he's confused. This is a worse problem. To be confused and to know you're confused, there's hope. To be confused and to refuse to admit you're confused or not to know you're confused is much worse. In which if you refuse to admit or if you don't know you're confused, you're only going to go from being lost to being really lost. Or in one Upanishad, it says brilliantly, you go from darkness to blinding darkness. As if darkness is not bad enough. You go from, you're already in a dark. Because it's in spiritual life. You go from ignorance to worse ignorance is what it means. You go from darkness to blinding darkness. You go from ignorance to confusion to more ignorance and worse confusion. This is bad news. Now, which category is Arjuna in? What do you think? Do you think that he's like the typical macho driver, don't tell me what to do, I know where I'm going? Well, here Arjuna begins, he says, he admits, karpanya dosha upahata subhavaha. Arjuna admits here, he says, my swabhava, my nature, is upahata, is overcome by the dosha, by the defect of karpanya, of weakness. Arjuna starts off by admitting, my nature is overcome, I am overpowered by weakness. That's what he says. He says, O Krishna, I admit, I am overcome by weakness. Prachami. Oh, and further he says, dharma samuddha chetaha. He says, I am one whose chetas, whose mind, whose intellect is samuddha. Muddha means confused, deluded. Then what does samuddha mean? Completely confused, totally deluded. So he says, he admits that his chetas, his mind, is samudha, completely confused and deluded with regard to what is dharma, what is the right thing to do. So he admits it. And how easy would it be if you're driving to admit, yeah, you're right, we're lost, let's go get some You cannot go for directions until you admit you're lost. You will not seek help and guidance in life unless we admit we're confused. This is a problem most of us have to various degrees, that we don't want to admit our weakness. We don't want to admit our confusion. And why? What a silly thing. If I admit my confusion, what will they think of me? Isn't that what the argument comes down to? What will others think? Well, tell me, do others ever get lost while they're driving? All the time. This kind of pride of not wanting to let other people know when you're confused or when you're struggling, when you're having difficulty, what will others think? This kind of thinking, this kind of conclusion does nothing but harm us. We're so concerned about what others will conclude about us, so we do the wrong thing. And when we do the wrong thing and stumble and fall on our face, then what they think? It's just wrong thinking on our part. Why can't we do what is right in the moment, ignoring anything else? Do the right thing. Who cares what others think? What is this need to be right in to look competent in the eyes of others? There's a hilarious story. I heard this story. I haven't told it yet. So if bear with me as I try to find proper words for this story. There was an old man lived with his son. They were kind of poor, and they really needed money, and they had this donkey. So they decided that they're going to take this donkey to the market to sell the donkey. So the old man and his son and the donkey, they're walking down the road, and some of his neighbors look at him and laugh. And they're making fun of him. He says, look at that. They're going down the road many miles to the market, and they're not even riding the donkey. They're walking on foot. Why should they walk on foot when they have the donkey there? So the old man and the son were ridiculed for not being on a donkey. So they said, they got on the donkey. Now they're going down, they're both on a donkey, and the neighbors start ridiculing him again. Look, this guy has no compassion. Two people on his one little donkey, and they're both sitting on a donkey, and this poor donkey is suffering like anything. And these guys don't have any sense. They don't have any compassion. So now what to do? The old man gets off. Son is on a donkey. The neighbors go on making fun of him. What kind of son is that? Let's his father walk while he's on the donkey. You know, the son and father got so frustrated and confused, the father told the boy, go find a big stick. They come back with a big stick. They tie the donkey by its feet to the stick. And they go on carrying, put the stick on their shoulders, and they go on to the market carrying the donkey. And the neighbors are now making even more fun out of them. We're carrying the donkey like it's a sack of potatoes. Is it worth it to always adjust your behavior so that you look good in the eyes of others? Wouldn't it make more sense just to do what's right and ignore the others? That's the whole point. You do what's right. Others... There will always be someone ready to criticize. You know this as well as anyone. Whatever you do, there's always someone who's ready to criticize you for your actions. So what? You know it's the right thing to do? That's all it takes. You know what's the right thing to do. Be true to your convictions. This is to be motivated from your sense of dharma, not to be motivated by the influence of others. Okay, enough said. So Arjuna here is admitting he's confused, and he's going, and we'll see that he's going to seek advice now. So he admits that he is dharma samuddha chetaha. He is completely confused with regard to dharma. So he says, prachami tvam. Prachami, O Arjuna, O Krishna, I ask Tvam, you. Krishna, I ask you, yat shreyas syat. What would be best? O Krishna, yat shreyas syat. What would be best? Nishchitam bruhi tan me. Tan, tat, that, me, to me. Bruhi, tell me that, nishchitam. Tell me with certainty, O Krishna, what would be best for me? Shishyaha te aham. Aham. I am te shishyaha. I am your student. Shadhi mam. Teach me. Shadhi. It's a command, a request. Teach me. Help me. Shadhi mam. Tvam prapannam. Teach me. I am prapanna. I am fallen at your feet. I am seeking your refuge. Now, this very important verse really shows the necessary attitude, perspective, to come out of our problems. So far in life, there's been a lot of struggle, a lot of difficulty, a lot of conflict. For most people. So, the fact that there's struggle and conflict and difficulty in your life day to day, doesn't that indicate that something's not working? How is it if somebody, and this is not describing you, but describing some other people, who are convinced that their way is right. Look at this. They're miserable in life. They're fighting with everyone. They're miserable and they're making others miserable every day. And they're convinced their way is right. What I'm doing is right. This is just a confusion that they're unwilling or unable to admit what they're doing is not working, it's not working right. So suppose true wisdom begins by our admission that maybe we don't know everything, maybe what we're doing is not the best thing to do, and further, maybe I need to get some guidance. Maybe I need help. And why not? Why should we do things? Why should we reinvent the wheel, so to speak? Why should we think that we have to do everything on our own? Why is it a weakness to take advice from others? Come on. Suppose you're in a work situation. You're using a new, just to give a very pragmatic modern example. You're using a computer program you've never used before, and like 99% of all other computer users, you have no inclination to look at the manual or the help file. You know, you're just trying this and trying that, and nothing's working, and this is what most computer users do. And you just can't make this program to do what you want. So, what are the options? Well, some options would be to open the manual or help file. No, that's not an option. Another option could be to call up their technical support, but then the technical support guy is going to be rude to you and ridicule you for being such an idiot and not understanding this really simple program, so you're not inclined to call them for advice. And your colleague at work is an expert in using this computer program. You could ask your colleague to give you some tips, but no, then what would he think of me? You'd think I'm some kind of idiot. So you sit in your office hour after hour, messing around with this computer program, getting nowhere. Does that make sense? You wouldn't do that. So here are three good options of getting some advice and guidance. The manual or help file is one option. Technical support is another option. Your office mate or colleague is another option. Certainly, you would get some help. Now, if this applies to a computer program, could this not apply to other situations in life? Suppose you're in a messy, complicated situation at home or some aspect of your life, dealing with a family member, dealing with an issue, dealing with some important issue in your life. But then there's reluctance to seek help or support. Why? What will they think if they know I'm struggling with this problem? Fine, go on struggling. Who wants to struggle? We struggle in life already so much. Can't we outgrow these stupid little egos and stop worrying about what other people think? And just since it's come a couple of times, worrying about what other people think, I have to share with you a personal story about the best lesson to ignore what other people think. You know, I wear this dress all the time. I don't wear anything else. And which means when I go through an airport, it's like this. When I go, years ago when I was at Arsha Vidya, every weekend I would either go to an airport or hop in a car and go someplace and teach. So imagine this is a typical scenario. Jump in a car and I'm going to Philadelphia or someplace to teach a class. And of course you have to get some gas. You pull over and now I'm standing there. Remember, only in New Jersey do they pump your gas. Everywhere else you get out and you pump. So I'm standing there pumping the gas. People are looking at me. And probably making all kinds of bizarre conclusions about me. You know, some kooky guy in orange bedsheets pumping gas. It was a wonderful thing to do and discover, who cares? So they think I'm a kook look at this. They think I'm a kook in a orange bedsheet. Tell me, how does their conclusion hurt me? What does it mean to me? Absolutely nothing. Or going through an airport and you hear, a story. This is my Pooja Swami Dayananda story. This is a true story that he's told several times. I don't know if you've heard it. He was giving a program in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This is maybe 30 years ago, long ago. And I know the people involved. I know his hosts and Pooja. I know Pooja Swamiji has told this story. And he was, Milwaukee at that time had one of the best zoos in the country, fairly new and just very elaborate. So the host says to Swamiji, would you like to see our brand new beautiful zoo, world-class zoo? Swamiji says, sure, why not? So they're going to the zoo. And, you know, there are different sections. And there's one section with all the primates, you know, the chimpanzees and orangutans and all these gorillas. There's a big gorilla there and all of this. And so they're going through this section. And as he's walking, he passes a young American couple going the other way. And as the young American couple passes, the man says to his female companion there, he says, hey, look at that one. And he says it deliberately loud enough for Pooja Swamiji to hear. You know, so he's baiting him. Hey, look at that one. Swamiji turns around and faces him and he says, yeah, and he can talk too. Wonderful. This is a true story. It happened exactly like I told you. And I know the host who was with Swamiji. We just love this story. So look at this. This person is ridiculing Swamiji, making some funny statement, ridiculing his appearance right there in a zoo. And it's a pretty nasty thing to say, right? You know, look at that one. With the orangutans and chimpanzees around, right? But look at Swamiji's response. And he can talk, too. Why not? Some idiot makes a wrong conclusion. What should you do? Tell me, if... Let's go back to the pumping gas thing, because I don't want to put words in Swamiji's mouth. Suppose I'm pumping gas, and somebody snickers, seeing me standing there. What should I do? Should I go and tell the person, this is, you know, the reason I'm wearing this dress is because I'm ordained as a sannyasi in a very traditional monastic order in India, and this is what's required of me in my role as a sannyasi and acharya. Tell me, though, if that person is, sorry to use a casual word, if that person is an idiot, and making a wrong conclusion about me based on his ignorance, by going and explaining things to the idiot, what does that make me? Absolutely. What can you do? There is a world of... Pardon me. There's a world of idiots out there. And if we're going to make it our job to go around and correcting every one of their opinions, we're going to waste our lives. So if some idiot has a stupid conclusion, who cares? It's not a big deal. Honestly, that for me, that was a big lesson because I'm a normal person. The first time I went, you go around like this at first, it was strange, definitely strange. And eventually you come to know it doesn't make any difference. It just doesn't make any difference. Our life is so short. Why should we waste our energy worrying so much about what other people think? Why not laugh with them, like Pooja Swamiji did? Not laugh at them. That's not nice and it doesn't do anything good. Don't laugh at them. Laugh with them. One last joke about this is on... this color is very stylish in this country twice a year. One is at hunting season, and the other is at Halloween. Now, this is a true story. I'm driving back to the ashram in the Poconos in Salisbury. I'm going. It's Halloween. It's that evening, and I'm going through a toll booth. And the guys in the toll booth can see down into your car very nicely. And as I give the guy the money, the guy says, "Hey, cool costume." I said, "Hey, man, thanks." And drove on. We might as well enjoy all this, because to go back to the American expression, to get hung up on what other people think limits us, becomes one more huge burden, and becomes self-defeating. We then are so afraid about what other people are think that we don't do the right thing, we get in trouble. So Arjuna here, he just admits, "Hey Krishna, I am confused. I don't know what is the right thing to do. Please teach me." And this Shadhimam, literally, teach me. Shashyaha teyaham, allow me to be your student. I am your student. Teach me. And finally, Twam prapannam, I am one who has seeken refuge at your feet. Look at the attitude. Some people confuse the word humility. This is an expression of humility. Humility doesn't mean you're groveling in the ground and very lowly person. Humility means getting rid of the stupid pride and ego. That's all it means. A humble person is not one who crawls in the dust. That's a person with a problem. Seriously. A person who says, "Oh, I'm just a miserable little person. In Hindu culture, some of the expressions of humility are a little over the top. You know, "I don't deserve to take the dust from your feet upon my head." And of course, statements like that are perhaps more poetic than anything else. But you probably know someone who has really low self-esteem. Someone who says, "I'm useless, I'm worthless, I'm not a good person. You're a good person, and I'm useless." What we're talking about is not humility. What we're talking about now is a problem. A person who says, "I am no good, I am useless, I am worthless." That's not humility. That's an illness, low self-esteem. Bhagavan has blessed each and every one of us tremendously. And any one of us who would say, "I'm a useless pile of whatever," this is a total denial of the blessings that we have all received from God. So low self-esteem or self-deprecation. It means to put yourself down. Self-deprecation is an illness. It's part of an illness called low self-esteem. That's not humility. Humility is, in an odd way, humility is not what you get. Humility is what you get, is getting rid of something. When you get rid of the false pride, when you get rid of the ego. So false pride would be, they should see me as someone great or competent or knowledgeable or skillful. That's false pride. So getting rid of it is, they see me, whatever they see, what is the expression? What you see is what you get. This is who I am. You know, I have some strong points, I have some weaknesses. And if you see only my weaknesses and draw a wrong conclusion about me, what can I do? That's a fact. What can I do? People are going to draw wrong conclusions about us all. One of the simplest but most brilliant bits of advice I ever got from Pooja Swamiji. Very, very simple. He can say so much in a handful of words. And once he said to me in a very simple way, he said, don't expect people to understand you. Don't expect people to understand you. Why should people understand? Tell me, do you understand everyone else? The people in your life, relatives and others? We don't understand others. Others' behavior puzzles us. Others' behavior will irritate us and frustrate us because we don't understand. If we don't understand the behavior of others, whoever gave us a silly idea that they should understand us? They don't understand us. They won't understand us. They can't understand us. And it's okay. It's absolutely okay. They'll do the best they can. You do the best you can. There's no necessity for others to understand us. That's why Swamiji so nicely, compassionately, and brilliantly said, don't expect others to understand you. It's a ridiculous expectation. So with this attitude, we get rid of the false pride. We get rid of the ego. We get rid of the concern about what others will think. And then we have a freedom inside to do what's right. This humility, that's what we're talking about. Humility is an absence of those barriers that prevent us from doing what's right, or in this case, humility is the absence of barriers that prevent us from getting the help and support and guidance that we need and deserve. Arjuna expresses that so nicely when he says, I am your student, shishyasteham, shadhimam, teach me, tvam prapannam, I have come to you as my refuge. So Arjuna here demonstrates the proper attitude of a student who is truly open to be taught. Have you ever had a friend, you know, that doesn't always work that way. Did you ever have a friend ask you for advice? And you sit with your friend for half an hour, an hour, have a cup of tea, and at the end of your hour-long discussion, giving your friend some advice, you discover that she already had her mind made up about what he or she were going to do. You know, that happens sometimes. That's a problem. Arjuna does certainly not have this problem. Okay. Let's continue.
Nahi prapashyami mam apanudyad. Nahi prapashyami manap. Yat chokamu choshanam indriyanam avapya bhumavasapatnam riddham rajam suranam api chadipatyam
nahi prapashyami He, indeed, na prapashyami, I do not see clearly. I do not see clearly, yat apanudyat mama shokam. We have to connect the words properly. I don't see what would Apanudhyat, remove. Remove what? Mama shokam, my sadness. O Krishna, I don't see any solution that can remove my sadness, my shokam. My sadness which uchoshanam indriyanam. My sadness which uchoshanam dries up indriyanam, my senses. The sadness, it's like a burning sadness. Arjuna complains, that sadness which is burning up my senses, which is burning up my heart, drying out my heart, scorching my heart. Trying to find some more poetic way of saying it. And Arjuna complains here, avapya bhumau. He says, avapya rajam bhumau. He says, avapya rajam, even suppose avapya, having attained avapya, having gained rajam, kingship, having gained this kingdom, bhumau, here on this earth, having obtained this earthly kingdom, asapatnam riddham, having obtained this riddham rajam, this wealthy kingdom, asapatnam, without any rival, so without any challenge, without having to share the rulership. So Arjuna says, even if I obtain this kingdom with no rival, without having to share power, he says, that would not dry up my senses. I'm sorry, that would not remove my sorrow. To making the connection to the first half. Arjuna says, I don't know what would remove this terrible sorrow. And he continues to say, even if we were to gain this kingdom with all of its wealth and with no rival, without having to share power, that would not remove my sadness. He says, suranamapi cha adhipatyam. He says, even if I were to gain rajyam, kingship, suranam adhipatyam. Adhipatyam, rulership, the status of being king or ruler, suranam, of the suras, of the devas, of the gods. Look at Arjuna's argument. He says, if I were to gain this earthly kingdom, that's not going to remove my sorrow. It says, even if I were to be the king of the devas, who's the king of the devas? Indra. So Arjuna says, even if I were to be Indra, king of the devas, even that would not remove my sadness. We'll end with this verse this morning. Sanjayo vacha. Eva muktva hrishikesham. Gura kesha parantapa. Nayotsyeti govindam. Muktva tushnim babhuvaha. So Sanjaya is narrating all of this to the blind king, Dhritarashtra. And he says, Evam uktva Hrishikesham. Hrishikesha, one of the many names for Sri Krishna. So, Sri Krishna, Evam uktva, unto Sri Krishna, having said this, Evam uktva, having said this unto Sri Krishna, who is speaking? Gudakesha, one of the many names for Arjuna, who is here called Parantapa, that very mighty, valorous, courageous, strong Arjuna, having said this much to Sri Krishna, he says, Na yotsya iti govindam. So having said this, uktva, having said govindam, having said all this to Govinda, and the last words that he speaks to Sri Krishna are here. So Arjuna has been talking to Sri Krishna for quite some time now. What are his last words? So a few moments ago he says, Shishyastehum shadhimam tvam prapannam. I am your students, teach me please. But his last words are, Nayotsya. I will not fight. Whoa!
few verses before, he said, I'm confused, I don't know what to do, please tell me what to do, I'm your student, teach me please, I seek refuge at your feet, but don't tell me to fight. He's confused. Arjuna is in bad shape. So his last words are, Nayotsya, I will not fight. So you can see, Sri Krishna has his work cut out for him to straighten out Arjuna, to help Arjuna, to clear Arjuna's mind from all this confusion. So Arjuna, uktva govindam, having said this, I will not fight, having said that to Sri Krishna, tushnim bhavuva, Arjuna bhavuva, he remained tushnim silent. Arjuna fell silent, having said, I won't fight. O Krishna, tell me what to do. I don't know what to do. I'm so confused. Tell me what to do, but don't tell me to fight. So Sri Krishna has a challenge to make Arjuna understand clearly. All right. We have some very good questions we want to include here at the end of the class. We'll continue with our text in our next class. Definitely questions will come up in these classes. Please send them by email. That's the best thing to do. So send me an email with your question, and then we'll take these up in classes. One comment about a translation by Paramahamsa Yogananda. In that translation of Yogananda, he compares the Mahabharata war to symbolically a war between the mind and the senses. And he says that the Pandavas represent the mind and the senses are represented by the Kauravas. And he gets into a pretty extended analogy based on the war of the Mahabharata. And the question is this a standard metaphor for understanding the Gita? There are no standard metaphors. Scriptures are what they are, and they're incredibly brilliant and poetic expressions, lending themselves to a lot of interpretation. So then the question becomes, what is the right interpretation and what is the wrong interpretation? Suppose you read a beautiful poem. Two people come up with very beautiful interpretations, but they're different. A beautiful poem, two people, two very different interpretations, beautiful interpretations, and you say, but which one is right? Huh? Is it true that one has to be right and one has to be wrong? I would suggest, instead of thinking about what interpretation is right and wrong, I don't think that language doesn't seem to apply very well to scriptural interpretation. The issue is, what interpretation is meaningful and helpful and useful? What interpretation is not meaningful, it's not helpful, it's not useful? Let's be a little bit pragmatic. If an interpretation is useful, then by all means, make use of it. So Paramahamsa Yogananda has an interpretation. It might not be very conventional. That is, it might not be the normal kind of interpretation. But if it's useful, wonderful. That's what it's all about. Then, next question. We commented earlier in this class that you cannot begin a life of spiritual growth starting off on the wrong foot and going against Dharma. So a thoughtful question here, first of all, refers to Gautama Buddha. Buddha who left a wife and child to undertake his life of renunciation. So is this the right thing to do? Maybe if Buddha could have advised himself as a young person, maybe Buddha would have told him not to run away from his wife and child. When Buddha left his wife and child, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing to do. He did leave, and he did become enlightened. He started off on the wrong foot, perhaps, but Buddha was an extraordinary person in an extraordinary situation. Can we say that's the exception rather than the rule? It's very dangerous to point to some great figure and say, look what they did. Therefore, I should be able to do the same thing. Huh? That's a lousy argument. You know, for example, someone might say, Mirabai got enlightened, and she never studied Bhagavad Gita, so why should I? And the simple answer to that is, if you are as great as Mirabai, you also need not study Bhagavad Gita. So it's very dangerous to use some exalted figure as a role model. They're not meant to be role. Buddha was a teacher, an extraordinary person, not meant to be a role model exactly. So then, what is a role model? Can we give an example of someone in Hindu culture who stayed with wife and family and responsibilities, and in the midst of those challenges, they gained enlightenment? There's an example that's given again and again, and it's King Janak. Janaka had the responsibilities of running a whole kingdom. You have a responsibility of running a house, running a household, maybe running a department or running a business. He had the responsibility of dealing with his family and running an entire kingdom. And he became a Rajarshi. He wasn't originally. He struggled like anyone to come up, but he gained enlightenment while in the midst of his worldly responsibilities. One last question, and that is, through the metaphor of the charioteer, we came to understand the role of intellect and emotion. How would you define intellect? We define intellect as the part of our thinking capacity that can evaluate a situation, compare several alternatives, and choose the best of those alternatives. That's what we mean by intellect, that analytical thinking part. Okay. The inherent danger of using emotions to drive one's decision-making ability is something we've discussed. Is it not also true that the intellect can be used to distort logic and give rise to harmful actions if misused? Well, we talked about that a lot. That's rationalization, the misuse or abuse of logic. But is it that your intellect itself decides to mislead you? Is it that the intellect says, oh, we don't want truth. We want confusion and ignorance. No intellect will go in that direction. Why does the intellect go in the wrong direction? Because of the pull of the emotions. Emotions can pull you in a good direction sometimes, we know that. Emotions can pull you in the wrong direction sometimes, we know that. And what we discussed in those prior classes is that the intellect should lead us to the right behavior regardless of our emotions. Whatever our emotions are, that's life. That's normal. And if you say, Swamiji, my emotions are so turbulent, you're normal. If you have turbulent, confusing emotions, congratulations, you are a member of the human race, along with me and everyone else. The goal is certainly not to get rid of our turbulent emotions. You want to go through life kind of like a robot, dead, and I don't remember that old TV show Star Trek. I don't know if any of you remember. This goes back to like 30 years ago. In the Star Trek movie, there was that character Spock, and Spock was half human and half alien. And the feature of Spock is that he had this brilliant intellect, zero emotion. No emotions, absolutely nothing. In one episode, his beloved Captain Kirk is dying. And Spock's response is, Captain, sir, I estimate you will be dead in 2.85 minutes. So is the goal of life to be emotionless? Hardly. God created us with our turbulent emotions. That's not the problem. The issue is, regardless of our emotions, we should do the right thing. That's it.
And in a prior class, remember we said the goal is not to control our emotions. That's not the goal. Emotions are what they are. The goal is not to control your emotions, but to control your behavior, which means to do the right thing regardless of what your emotions are doing. So this is very good. So if you have any questions, please send them to me by email. A couple of brief announcements at the end of our class. Tomorrow we have our meditation workshop at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can join us. It's a very nice way to learn some meditation techniques. 9 o'clock meditation workshop. Our program for teenagers continues at 11 a.m. And for children, we have a program at 3 p.m. So please join us for those programs tomorrow. Just one moment here.